Hello there, AfterBuzzers! Welcome back to Supergirl After Show! This is Season 2, Episode 9, Supergirl Lives! Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV! And now, let the buzz begin!
Yes, love that song! Welcome back! It is me, Tori J. Miller, and I'm joined by three amazing hosts. To my left, we have Stephanie Winger.
Hi, everybody. Good to be back with you. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Stephanie Winger.
Lex Michael.
You're not wrong. I am Lex Michael, and I am all over social media at The Lex Michael.
Excellent, Lucretia Lyon.
That is me. So you can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And Lucretia's manning the chat for all those who want to talk to us. And I'm Tari J. Miller. You can find me at Tari J. It's T-A-U-R-I-J-A-Y. This is my old-timey comic book voice.
Is that what that is?
That's what that is.
It's amazing. We love it.
It's so like that Superman radio show.
Yeah, right? That's a bird. It's a plane. Okay. So lots to unpack in this episode, so I'll stop wasting time. So, I would really like to talk about Kara a little bit. Also,
really?
I'd like to, from the beginning, say that Kevin Smith did a great job.
Yes, yeah. I thought he did a great job. I thought his daughter, Harley Quinn Smith, who played Izzy, the kidnapped girl, I thought did some good stuff here.
Yes.
The title, I don't know if you guys caught the super meta deep cuts Superman reference that is the title.
I did.
Yeah, so there's a very famous, infamous story that Kevin Smith told in his first Evening with Kevin Smith DVD set. Mm-hmm. And it's a story about how in the 90s, Warners was looking to develop a new Superman movie, and they hired him to write a draft of a script for a movie that would be called Superman Lives. And I urge everybody really strongly to go to YouTube, look up him telling the story. He's wonderful interactions. He talks about these very strange business. He's going back and forth with the producer, John Peters. But eventually, of course, that screenplay never got made. Tim Burton came in at one point and was going to make that movie with Nicolas Cage. There's a documentary on it that came out recently called The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened? Obviously, it did not. But I love the fact that they had Kevin Smith coming to the table, directing a Supergirl episode. So it's like, all right, right up top. We're going to lead with a really big wink.
Yeah. And you only forgot the giant spider.
So we all like jumped up out of our seats when we heard the reference to a Thanagarian snare beast for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. Not just because obviously they're name-checking Thanagar again, which is where the Hawk people are from, but one of the stories that Kevin Smith tells about working with producer John Peters on this script is that John Peters had it in his head. He was really committed to this idea that at some point, Superman in this movie should fight a giant spider. And Kevin Smith said, why a giant spider? And John Peters says to him, well, Kevin, they're the fiercest killers in the insect kingdom. And so they're like, all right, well, if we're going to have him fight a giant spider, we can't just call it a giant spider. We're going to give it a crazy, cool name, like a Thanagarian snare beast. And so when they dropped that in there tonight, I was like, they're winking at me again.
Yeah. It was really cute.
He got his giant spider in Wild Wild West.
Yes.
It's amazing, yes.
And Thanagarians are also where the Hawk people are.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. More nerd.
So, yes, this was very juicy with Kevin Smithery's. Mm-hmm. One could say that he was a Smith when he forged this episode.
But they won't.
I'm so excited to see him. I know he's directed episodes of The Flash, and so it was fun to see him kind of in this universe, but on Supergirl as well. So I really enjoyed kind of, because he did some amazing Flash episodes as well.
Yeah.
Also, the Goofus and Gallant references. Now, yes, Goofus and Gallant is actually a thing that exists outside of Supergirl, but you don't hear it referenced too often anymore unless you listen to Kevin Smith's podcast, on which he will weirdly frequently drop Goofus and Gallant references.
He was really into highlights. He must have been at the doctor a lot as a kid.
Probably. Yeah. Or he loves figuring out the difference between two pictures, as one does.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't like that?
You know who doesn't? Kara probably doesn't, because she can see through all the pictures. Speaking of Kara, she feels really, really complacent. She's been stopping bank robberies and jewel thieves, but it's not enough for her. So when this missing person gets thrown in her lap, she decides to investigate, guys.
Sure.
Yeah. I liked it. It kind of reminded me of those of like the old noirs where someone's like, "Nah, someone's missing," or usually it's a lady. And she's like, "Someone's missing," and you have to like chase
someone's
it down.
Missing.
But I thought it was a really good way to spark this whole story, and it really like took us to different places.
Also, quite literally,
yes,
yeah, absolutely. I also wanted to say though that I feel like. We're finally seeing in season one of Supergirl, oftentimes Kara was like very kind of quiet and, you know, at work she really kind of went with what they wanted from her. She was an assistant, as you should when you're an assistant. And now we're finally seeing Kara kind of spark as a character, and that's really fun, as well as Supergirl, and kind of seeing those, a lot of her character traits from Supergirl switch into being in Kara, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even gruffy old
Snapper Carr.
Snapper Carr just loved, you know, her taking the charge.
Actually,
there.
Finally gave her a little bit of like, "Good job, kid."
Yeah.
At the end, which was nice. It was, I was like, "Aw," especially earlier when he's grumbling about his Danish. Which, by the way, grumbly mm-hmm. Danish Snapper Carr is now my favorite.
I love Snapper Carr. Gomez. So
yeah. I actually want somebody to make the Venn diagram he talked about, where it's like, it's two things. It's what it's like, the coffee and the Danish. I want that as a poster.
I'd wear that
and
shirt.
I can put it up above my bed or something.
I mean, it fuels him. yes. I love that, like, Kara is now able to kind of forge her own path, which is kind of what she's doing also in the DEO world. DEO? Yes. It's really doing well for her.
Yes.
I like that we get lizard people.
Lizard people too. And okay, not for nothing, there were a couple of references to Star Trek in tonight's episode. And
yes.
One of the first big ones that jumped out at me, whether or not it was intentionally a reference, when they first get to this alien planet and you've got the lizard dudes that they have to grapple with for a minute, the desert environment, the fight in the aliens that are also clearly people wearing makeup, I got very strong flashbacks to Arena, the classic episode of Star Trek where Shatner fights the lizard dude in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, maybe that's just a happy coincidence, and then later in the same episode we get the explicit, the red shirt references.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, they probably knew what they did.
And see, there were probably people that didn't get that the red shirt thing was Star Trek. So yeah, guys, the red shirt always was the guy who died.
Yeah. They showed you how dangerous the environment was so that you, like, raise the stakes for the good guys. And I would wonder, and maybe chat if you're available to answer this, or Kevin Smith, if you're watching this, maybe you can answer. But, like, there are specific bluffs down in L.A. that they used for Star Trek a lot. And I wonder if this was shot in the same area or if it was in a soundstage.
Well, I would say it's possible, but I believe Supergirl production is in Vancouver now with the rest of the CW show.
Yes, you are correct.
But otherwise, I would have had the same thought. I'd be like, did they shoot in the same location?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they have one in Canada too.
Oh yeah, plenty of bluffs in Canada.
Sure.
Yeah. So many bluffs. One could say, nope, I'm not going to make that joke. It was a poker joke. All right, cool. I like that we got the introduction of Maldoria. Mm-hmm. That's a mouthful. Maldoria. Slaver's Moon. It really introduced a kind of a rough concept in that, like, now they're basically enslaving humans, and slavery is a really big trade intergalactically.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Just like intergalactically.
Human trafficking. I was like going to make a song about
intergalactic
it. Human trafficking.
Nope.
It just doesn't really roll off the tongue
this
anymore.
Nope. I don't want it.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
No, our musical episode isn't until their musical episode, thankfully. Thankfully for the rest of you.
I tried to rap on Gotham last week, too. It was terrible.
But they take the time to remind us that, like, Daxamites were slavers.
Yes.
Which is really interesting. It, like, adds another layer to the Mon-El character.
Well, especially now, we're tipping what's going on with Mon-El
pretty
hard, I think, now. And I think it's appropriate timing that we start to explore. You know, we get moments from him tonight where he talks about, you know, well, the Prince of Daxam wasn't so great, and I want to be better than that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe this isn't even predictions anymore. We all know he's the prince, right? He's got to be.
I mean, it seems blatantly clear at this point. Like, it would be more of a twist for him to not be the prince at this point.
So as he's going through this journey on a personal level, I think it's very appropriate timing that he now is faced with an element of, let's call it, less than wholesome doings that he himself may have engaged in the past, forcing him to confront his own conscience and guilt feelings, real meaty character stuff.
Yeah.
I kind of want there to be, if it does become true that he is in fact the prince, I want some flashbacks to that time in his life and what he did and why he's, is the way he is now.
I'd like to see him in the fancy prince garb, so I'd be down with the flashbacks and see what his big deal is why not he doesn't want to be the prince. I mean, like you said, he was kind of a douche, and it's like, well, we kind of already saw that, but you're just adorable, so did people get over it?
Well, it's interesting, because I feel like he's coming into some, like, self-realization since he came to planet Earth, and, like, he actually has a job at the bar, which he's not very good at. He misses day two, but still, he's, like, trying, and I think this is the first time we're really seeing him try, and we also get, like, a hint of a possible relationship to come with Kara. And I think he's going to have to learn to be a better guy from whatever he was before.
Yeah, they shared a blankie, and that was adorable.
It was the cutest, just on a side note.
Even I was like, oh, man, feelings.
You know, I thought it was adorable, so, yeah.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, in that he now decides that he wants to be a hero. I mean, they spent a lot of the episode going back and forth, where he's like, you know, just kind of keeping your head down is a viable way of life. And Kara is very much on the side that being a hero is a necessity, especially when you have power. Some would say that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes,
I don't know who would say that.
I don't know that would fit in this universe, Tari.
No? Okay. All right. Some would say that if you have a lot of abilities, you should do something.
Well, I think it's interesting that, like, I think what's to come, and this is a little bit of prediction, but that he's going to really struggle with the fame, quote-unquote, versus, like, he's going to want to indulge in the fame side of it, and Kara is going to push him towards the actual being a hero side of it.
I like that idea. I like the idea of, even if only for an episode or two, of getting the, like, brash, cocky Johnny Storm version of Mon-El, I think could potentially be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I really want him to put on the leather jacket. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was talking about the cape. It's like, no.
Yeah.
You need the leather jacket.
Oh, yeah.
But the chat is really talking about, there are a couple named Caramel, which I just learned right now.
Oh, yeah.
That's so adorable. Because I saw Kevin Smith hashtagged it, and then Kyle Kent, Ivan Soto, everyone's going with that name, and I think it is the cutest. And Boo69Bs wants us to say, did you notice the alien from the crossover? So, yes, the Dominator was dominated by Mon-El.
That's my girl.
What I like, too, is that this is the first episode back after the crossover. I like that we didn't immediately forget about this supremely powerful race of aliens that were a massive threat a minute ago. I like that the Dominators continue to be a presence. I also like that the Dominators continue to partner up with other alien races, which is very much their modus operandi in the comics. They tend to hang back and let other people do their dirty work.
Yeah.
But now, it's like, you saw the bow, and that, to me, again, is, like, the hardest, like, tip of the hand. It's like, well, clearly, if he's not royalty, the alien dude with the red dot on his forehead that controls people's minds sometimes thinks he is.
Right. Or maybe that's the alien way of threatening. That was like he's like, I'm gonna get you, sucker, and that's how you say it in Dominator. Dominators are also blaxploitation characters.
Sounds right.
I would watch it. Yeah. Is that weird? I'd watch it.
Yes, and I also like... the one thing I liked about that as well is that even if you didn't watch the crossover, which, why wouldn't you have? Because it was amazing. But even if you didn't, you're not losing anything from that exchange. You know, her being Kara saying, like, I hate those guys could also just mean the lizard people, in addition to her referencing the fact that she fought the Dominators before.
Right.
So I just like the accessibility of their presence.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I still like the Dominator's voices that are like... And I'm going to learn that language. I'm going to do it. You know, some people are in like Elvish or Klingon.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to learn the Dominatorese.
Oh, you should.
I'm going to do it.
I speak a little Enochian. Because my brother went through a Crowley phase.
Like, oh, that's
a
thing.
All right. So it's a shorter skip over, maybe.
Yeah. They're telling us to talk about Joe. Like, we're getting...
Wait, okay. Yeah. Yes. I know. That was... Guys, I have a schedule
on
my
board. He has, like, a whole thing, guys. And, like, I should take a picture.
I will talk about it when I'm ready. And I'm ready now. Okay.
And that was just because you were ready. Not because I talked to you.
But Joe is a really fun character. I really hope he sticks around. Mostly because... we don't have a lot of aliens who are just aliens.
Right. Yeah. And I like the idea that whether it is Joe, if he continues to make appearances, or a character like that could serve as an informant of sorts, because he would be a part of underground alien society in this city in a way that Kara and Jean and the DEO are not. So I love that he could be their guy on the inside that they could occasionally go to as an informant.
Mm-hmm. I immediately thought of Clem on Buffy.
That's exactly what I thought of.
Because that's who he should be, that guy.
So, yeah, and whether or not we see Joe fill a capacity like that one, I would like to see some version of that happen.
Yeah. Do you like Joe, Steph?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because I think... there's a lot of ways. Like, I felt like that was a storyline that it kind of opens up a lot of doors, and I'm not sure which way it's gonna go. I feel like these guys are far more versed in that, but I'm really excited to see what happens.
Yeah.
I kept thinking it might be Muse in that costume.
That'd be cool.
Jason Mewes is just always in everything's for Kevin Smith, and this would be a way to be like, well, he's here, but I couldn't find any info on that, so I might be wrong.
My fingers are crossed that we're going to get a Jason Mewes cameo the next episode that Kevin Smith is doing this season.
Episode 17. Woo-hoo!
So, yeah, we've talked about Joe, audience. Speaking of the audience,
this is the point in the program where Tari becomes ultra confrontational. It always happens.
Yeah, I want to talk to you, audience, about iTunes.
Yes.
I'd really like to talk to you about how you guys keep us coming back every week. You know, hey, do we charge you for this? No, it's free. And you know why it's free? Because of people like you. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
And you know what? All you have to do is one simple thing. You just go on to iTunes. Yeah, leave us a rating. Wait, I forgot. And if you have a chance, maybe leave a comment. Tell us how much you love us in the same way that we love you. So it's simple. You just go on, you leave 5 stars, 4 stars if you think that, hey, something isn't right here. And then we'll go, what's up with that? And then we'll read your comment. We do that on the air. That is your reward for leaving us a comment, is you get to hear us say things that you wrote on the air.
We love a good shout-out.
Yeah.
You're what we're really saying.
And we genuinely appreciate it.
Yeah, yes, no, we do. And we read everything. Even if we don't read it on air, we do read all of your comments.
Yeah, and we actually have quite a bit, because how long have we been gone? Because I think we haven't read from... November 28th, we've got quite a few, so let me get through these. I'll try not to cough on you people as I struggle through these. But Born Again Supergirl Fan by Reflex123 says, so I'm one of those people who tuned out of Season 1 Supergirl, but with Season 2, I gave it another look, and I am loving it. And I am loving you covering it, because you make me even happier after I watch an episode. Keep it up, crew.
Aw, sweet.
And this one is specifically to you, Tori.
Holy crap.
I'm going to try an angle here. Callie Joe 19 says, I love this podcast. Y'all are super awesome and great. R-O-B...
Robo-ghosting.
No, robo-ghosting.
Hashtag robo-ghosting.
I was like, what is this word? Thank you, Lex. P.S. The Uncle Ben comment made me laugh so freaking hard, probably more so than I should have had.
Was this a comment from a time traveler?
What? Oh, did we do this again?
I don't know. Maybe I said that someone was Uncle Ben. I reference Uncle Ben a lot. He's a very important part of my life.
He really influenced you, much like Peter Parker. You know? But yeah, there's more. A super time. A nerd named A. Dre. One of my favorite after shows. The hosts are very enthusiastic and are great to listen to in the morning after the show. Oh my god, two more. Best Show Ever by Thalita Carvalho, BR. The first thing I do on Tuesday morning is to tune into this show. These guys are so amazing. I love Supergirl, and getting to hear them talk about it, as I excitedly feel pretty amazing. Excitedly feel pretty amazing. That's a lot.
That's awesome. No.
And then something that I really enjoy about this show is how much I learn, because each and every single person on this panel knows a lot of stuff about superheroes and TV shows, and it's amazing how I keep learning new things just by listening to these guys talk. And they are really fun as well, which is always a plus. I don't have many friends that watch Supergirl, but listening to the after show for the series is like sitting at a table with friends to talk about my favorite TV show of the moment. Thank you guys for being so amazing, and keep up the good work. You are super awesome.
Aww. That's really sweet.
That is.
Yeah, and oh, last one. Love this podcast by JoanIth07. I love listening to this every week. I'm not familiar with the comics, so I appreciate the background to the characters and the story that I wouldn't know otherwise. I really enjoy this panel, and I know all of you from other after shows I listen to, so it almost feels like I'm listening to a bunch of my friends discuss one of my favorite shows. Stephanie, I've been listening to you since the good old Glee days.
Oh, nice!
Wow. And sorry, I think your enthusiasm and energy is infectious, and I love your positive outlook. All four of you are a joy to listen to. Keep up the great work.
Aww.
So many good things. We've been gone so long.
Seriously. No. You guys are really sweet.
Yeah.
Long ranty piece aside from earlier, we really like to thank you for, you know, keeping up with us, watching every week and coming back. And we appreciate all the thumbs up in the comments and the stars and all that stuff. So, yeah, I look forward to, you know, continuing the season with you guys.
Fills my heart.
Yeah. So, back to the show. Guys, let's talk about Win for the Win.
So, poor guy.
I feel like he is just a character who continually gets, like, beaten down in one way or another, and you just want to see him win at this point. And his name is Win.
It's ironic.
Yeah, I know. I had to go there. Sorry, guys. I really want him. And you see a little bit at the end of the episode, him getting his confidence back. But I want to see him, like, succeed for a minute. I just feel like we don't get a lot of that.
Yeah, and I like Win, and I want to see him succeed. Yeah. That little end bit of him like, I'm back, baby, was adorable.
Well, and it's easy to forget, especially because Win is a part of these missions on a regular basis, but he does so at a remove. He participates at a remove. It's easy to forget that if you're not used to going out in the field like some of these characters are, something in the world of Supergirl, something like having a gun pointed at you is actually relatively simplistic and tame and grounded. And yet, good God, would that be horrifying had you never experienced it before?
Yes. He gets the most, realistic and succinct arcs. Like he'll start an episode one way and you'll see a definite change, which I really like about his character. Like, for a long time, especially last season, we were like, what are they doing with Wynn? But, like, they're really, like, making him his own person. They're really, like, giving him, like, his own strength that he's had to really, like, from the ground up, build himself.
I also feel like this season, more than in the first season, he's become kind of the eyes and ears of the audience. Like, he is, like, he's the accessible one in this world that can get a little outlandish. It's a superhero show.
Sure.
And so he often kind of pulls back. It's between him and Alex being kind of those grounded characters and the access point to this world.
I think, too, one of the smartest on a long list of very, very smart decisions they made when they moved the show from the CBS over to the CW was bringing Win into the DEO without really a ton of fanfare or explanation. It's just, hey, I work here now. And suddenly he can be the eyes and ears for the audience because he's actually in the room while these things are happening.
Yeah, to me, he's very much like their version of Cisco or Felicity, where he's the guy that knows all the stuff and is pretty well giving them what to do and then making their costumes and doing cool stuff. But he's also his own character, much like they are, and that we want to see Wynn grow. We want to see Wynn. And the Space Rocks was adorable. Yeah, those, like, bam, I went to another planet.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it was like the tourist moment. Again, yeah. Going back to being super relatable. Like, if you went to another planet, you would want to bring a souvenir back, and the rocks were his souvenir. Yeah. It was really cute. It just, yeah.
Guys, do you think that, like, he's going to find a bunch of diamonds in those rocks and be like, oh, I'm also rich now.
That would be fun.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like in a fantasy sequence, like I could see that. Wouldn't that be so fun to be like, oh, wait, and then you like wake up and it's over.
Well, Roulette was like, diamonds are just everywhere in this planet. They throw them around. They like poop diamonds all the time. Like, that's what she said. Probably verbatim. I don't remember.
That seems correct.
Yeah.
My assumption with the rocks was that he was going to use it maybe to upgrade the Guardian suit. Maybe if there's diamonds in the material or it's diamond-like material, that's probably, unless they make it out of vibranium, which only exists in the other universe, probably diamonds would be a boost in production quality as far as material, no?
Probably. Yeah.
And then if he decides he's done, he can just sell the suit and retire.
Yeah. Even just, like, a piece of the suit.
Yeah, you Barney know? Tried to buy a suit made of diamonds on How I Met Your Mother, so they do exist.
Do they?
It was also a TV show.
I mean, maybe pricey, but I'm sure you could make it happen.
Yeah, I will say, too, one thing that was just consistently tickling me throughout this episode was watching the different ways Wynn was trying to hide his black eye from people, whether it was the sunglasses, or I believe it's when he's talking to James, he very dramatically has half of his face behind the locker room door. It's like, this is beautiful.
Since I brought her up, I want to talk about Roulette a little bit. We didn't get to her on the Maldoria section, but she's so formidable, and it's weird because she's a human.
Well, it's weird. It's weird for that reason, and it's also weird because I'm sitting watching this episode tonight and thinking to myself, I never would have thought in 100 years that the character of Roulette was going to be a character that I was going to get excited to see recur in this way. Mm-hmm. And every time she shows up, I'm like, it's her, but like in that good way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really interesting character, and I hope to see her around. It's just like the, you know, sort of like the Malcolm Merlin, where when crap's about to happen, she just shows up and is like, yeah, it was me.
I especially also really like that actress. She's been following, or I guess so, I've been following her.
Yes.
Deacon Lockman.
Deacon, who plays Roulette?
Yeah.
That's, if pronunciation may be off, but I believe that's her name.
Okay.
Phonetically is what it looks like.
She was on Dollhouse.
Was on Dollhouse.
She was on Dollhouse, The 100, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., something else, and this.
I feel like she's just incredible, especially in this role. Like, it's just a really fun character for her, and it feels like she, very believable.
Mm-hmm. She's very distinct and very, like, there's a lot of conviction behind her words, which really sells the character. Because this could have been a really hokey character where it's like, nah, I'm always out for myself.
It could have been like Batman 66 level campy.
Yeah, I think also when someone's so one note, like, I'm evil, and, like, there's nothing else there, that can get really old, especially in a reoccurring situation. And this, there feels like there's more depth to it than just, like, I'm straight evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that she is just very much, like, a money-hungry, like, you know, power-hungry, just human. That's just like, I'm gonna mess stuff up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now it's time to talk about what everyone wants to talk about. Malix. Hashtag Malix. For those who don't know, that's Maggie and Alex. Maggie and Alex. Brought to you by Hashtag Malix. Okay.
I have to say that I think they are so sweet together. I love them. I was so frustrated when Alex, like, in that moment where she was like, maybe I'll end it because of what was happening with Supergirl, she was, like, trying to end it with her. I just was like, we've only gotten such, like, a little taste of this. I want so much more, and there's so much depth in this relationship, and so I was happy to see that they're, like, trying to work it out and continue forward.
Yes, and now, obviously, that the question of Supergirl being Alex's sister now being confirmed for Maggie and it, that being out in the open, I think that'll lead to some interesting dynamics between the three of them, certainly. And I like that it's something that Maggie basically figured out by herself.
Yeah.
Because she's good at her job.
Yeah. I also loved the comment being, oh, she, you know, I also, the glasses are not that great. Really? I was like, it's what we talk about all the time. Yeah. Like, so it felt nice. Again, that audience awareness that they're so good on this show.
Yeah, I really like that. And it was funny for Maggie to be the one to point it out. She's like, how did you really think I didn't know? Yeah.
But I love, too, that the relationship between Alex and Maggie also creates a lot of wonderful moments between Alex and Kara where they feel... They feel the most like sisters to me when, for example, moments like when Alex tells Kara that Maggie spent the night. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh my God, really? And I was like, oh, I totally buy that these two grew up together, they share secrets with each other, and she would be so genuinely excited for her sister, and I really like those moments.
Yeah. I feel like they do a really great job of being, like, of believable sisters, and also clearly best friends at this point. Like, there's nobody else that knows their secrets like they do, and it's really cute to see this relationship kind of grow, and we got a little bit of like Alex having issues with the way they grew up, and now they seem just closer than ever, and that's a really fun place to be.
Yeah, to me, there's so much on TV about siblings having rivalries. It's so nice to see when they actually have good sibling relationships on shows that are so believable. They have such good chemistry. I like happy families.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that that relationship also informed the way that Alex kind of goes about her relationship, in that she feels so, she's always felt so responsible for Kara, and like the weight of the world is on her shoulders, that like this moment where she loses control, she doesn't really know how to handle it. And she is constantly worried about like losing something that she cares about. And I thought that was a really nice touch, because it was a very realistic relationship moment. Like, they could have just had them together and been cutesy the rest of the time, but like there are these very distinct character struggles that she goes through that like really make sense based on the person that we know her to be.
I was also, I think she mentioned it a few times in the episode, talking about kind of when everything's going well, it all falls apart for her. And I thought that that was so relatable. I think, like, you have those moments where you're like, it's all coming together. Like, when is the other shoe gonna drop? And to hear a character on TV talk that way was a very, again, relatable moment.
Yeah, absolutely. What keeps blowing me away about this show, one of many things actually that keeps blowing me away about this show, is how effective the relationships are. And I guess on paper it's like, well, of course you'd think they would be, but I don't know about you guys, I don't ship relationships on TV that often, because far more often than not I feel like the best argument that they're giving me for why these two characters should be together is the fact that they're both attractive and it's a TV show. Almost every relationship on this show seems so genuine. There's not, and the chemistry you could define as like, well, moments that work are chemistry. What does that really mean? All right, I don't really have an answer to that question necessarily, but you feel such a spark between every character and every interrelationship, whether it's romantic or otherwise. It's the same reason why all of the Kara and Mon-El stuff is just like increasingly making me melt. And I'm not that guy.
Melt like caramel?
but seriously, I was never that guy. And now watching this show, I'm that guy four or five times an episode.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like these characters, like, I rarely watch a show where I root for the characters as hard as I root for almost across the board these characters. Like, I want them to, like, figure out their way, and I think they're doing a great job of kind of like letting the audience in on that journey. Like, each of them are having their own, as you mentioned, their own character arcs and everything, but you cheer for them. You want them to succeed in some way or find happiness, whatever their kind of goal is.
Yes, and we are being corrected by the chat. Malix is apparently Maxwell Lord, and Alex's ship name, this is Sonvers for Maggie and Alex.
No. I've never shipped those two, so Malix. But fine.
I liked Aggie.
Aggie?
I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
But apparently it's Sonvers.
Sonver. Okay, well, the internet has spoken. Hashtag Sonver! Doesn't sound as cool.
But two, the fact that all of these characters are presented as complex. Even Kara, who is playing Supergirl, who, for all intents and purposes, is our aspirational icon. They're all portrayed as very complex. Nobody's perfect. It's not black and white. Even the good guys have very real human foibles. Even if they're aliens, they have real, recognizably human foibles. And it's amazing to watch these personalities maneuver around each other and the way they have to sometimes get out of their own ways and think about the other person to resolve it. It's very real in a way that even with all of the aliens and the superpowers, feels so much more like these are real loving human relationships than so much of what I see on television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yes. Good. Great.
Yeah. But I will say that I lost my words. Mm-hmm. Anyway, speaking of relationships, we got that cute little thing with Kara and Mon-El, and then we had it countered by that scene with our mysterious people from the end of last episode, essentially murdering our lizard doc.
Lizard talk.
Yeah.
Dr. Lizardman.
I'm pretty sure that's another thing in that other universe we're not supposed to talk about.
Oh, that's right. There was a lizard doctor in that other one.
Yeah.
But this one had two arms.
Yeah. Totally not the same.
No.
Not at all.
So, yeah, I mean, and that, so again, basically confirms our Prince Mon-El theory. But, like, there are so many things that these people could be. There could be followers. They could be assassins. They could be something else.
Well, obviously their faces are obscured by hoods, but what little we can see, it doesn't look like a human visage under there.
Hmm. You don't know what a human visage looks like.
Yo, I know my visages.
Maybe.
You think I don't know my visages?
I don't know.
I'm a visage master.
Won't you go on BuzzFeed and take the visage quiz?
That's what they call me. Visage. They call me visage master. That's my Cisco villain name.
Dang.
It's like, that dude knows all the faces. That doesn't sound that dangerous.
unless your whole career is like lineups in police. Yeah. It's like he knows them faces. Anyways.
That could be a handy skill.
I feel like this is a good time. Before we jump into predictions,
yes.
Was there anything else that you guys really liked about the episode? Anything that we might have missed? Anything that you super duper enjoyed?
Well, the chat keeps asking us if we hate Jimmy or James or whatever he wants to be called, the Guardian. I don't really understand his place at this point. And that's the only thing is, like, I like Makai Brooks. It was an interesting choice to go the Guardian route, but where is that fitting in? I feel that maybe it's just sort of a back burner until we get to it.
I want more. Yeah. I feel the same way as you. I want more of Jimmy. I need to understand kind of where he fits into this universe. Like, he obviously took over Calista Flockhart's role, kind of, but then they put in the editor-in-chief, and it's just kind of confusing in a general sense, and I know they have the Guardian aspect of it. I want more of this character. I feel like we kind of lost that arc for me.
Mm.
A little bit.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. More than anything, it just seems like he's incredibly sidelined at this point, and we get him suiting up as the Guardian very sporadically here and there, and during these scenes it feels a little bit like a big piece of Arrow suddenly merged with this.
Yes.
It feels very Arrow-y, which is fine. I like Arrow, but I'm waiting for it to feel like it is entirely of a piece with the rest of the show around it.
Right. Well, I feel like they're setting up this rift between James and Kara. Like, all this episode, she's like, grr, Guardian. Mm. I hate that Guardian. Guardian's a piece of poop. And then, I mean, they're basically setting up the dominoes for drama. The dominoes.
The dominoes.
Yes.
That's a great name for a band.
Well, I have to say that I think that this entire episode was... We had the crossover right before. They took a long break in this show, and now we are starting back up, and it'll go through, I assume, the season finale now. And I think that they really did a good job in this episode of kind of starting the second half of the season. Like, there's a lot of questions, and there's a lot of things that I think we're going to get, and that's certainly one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's opposed to, like, Martian Manhunter, who, like, with John, he explains why. He's like, I can't go there. That's not for Martians. They'll die. And then I'm like, okay, so we have an explanation as to why you're hanging back. I mean, I like to see this character, but
there was that part of me, like, yeah. I frequently do whenever John says why he can't go help them. I'm like, this is a very expensive episode already, isn't it? Yeah, I got it, dude. Just stay in the office. Thank you for the sun grenade. We got it.
It's just like when Firestorm has to separate. You're like, oh, they couldn't afford it.
to be fair, these are expensive shows.
Yes, very much so.
And they do an incredible time after time with the with what they do and the budget they have on, like, it's incredible.
It is. In seriousness, the way that these shows are able to stretch the budget they're working with is insanely impressive to me.
Yeah. So I'm gonna jump us into predictions now, guys. Wow.
Do it. Take the leap.
Oh yeah.
Do it.
Predictions. So, in the next episode preview, we have Livewire returns. Bum, bum, bum. We haven't seen her since our last crossover, ne?
Was the last time we saw her when Flash came over? Yep. Last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite episodes of season one. I really enjoyed it, so I'm excited to have her return.
I'm a little upset that Silver Banshee wasn't with her. I like their little team up.
Yeah. I feel like she may be busy on Designated Survivor.
Oh, I did not know. I'd tell you Ricci was on that show.
Yeah.
I love her. She's married to Robbie Amell, who was the original Firestorm. Fun fact.
And is apparently coming back at some point this
season. This season on The Flash, spoiler alert, guys.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting indeed. Yes. But so what I love about this promo where we see Livewire come back is it's still, I know I say a version of this frequently, but it still makes me so profoundly happy that we're at a point with all of these interconnected shows with so many characters from the comics that are now, we've established them, we've gotten the legwork out of the way of introducing who everybody is and where they fit, and now they show up again. It's like, oh, this person, and everybody has history, they're old foes, and it is increasingly, these shows are increasingly like picking up and reading comic books.
Yeah.
My heart, you guys, is so full.
I mean, I feel like the CW is just becoming, like, all of this with, there's a new one as well that's joining the pack soon. I think it's, like, Riverdale.
I don't know at what point Arrow and Supergirl and Flash and the Legends will cross over with Riverdale, but
it's still in that comic book universe. Like, it's interesting.
And on the CW Seed app, there will be the Constantine cartoon show, and hopefully he will come back in live action.
Yeah.
I did talk to Matt Ryan earlier today, and he said maybe.
Ooh, he maybe. Said, maybe.
He said,
such a teaser.
Said maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe you're gonna see me on that TV. Okay, that's enough of that.
If only he is Welsh.
So what do you guys think is gonna happen throughout the rest of the season? I mean, we don't really have a big jumping off point. The only things that we know that have been a big through line are what's going to happen with Mon-El. And that's it. And also alien rights throughout the universe of Earth-S.
Right.
Well, so now that we know a couple of things, or we're reasonably sure we know a couple of things. We know that the Daxamites were slavers, and we are reasonably sure that Mon-El was the Prince of Daxam.
Right.
So, of course, that the alien rights issue that you just addressed, oh man, does that now present so much opportunity to drive some of those points home even further? Because now, once this comes out, once Kara and everybody else knows who he is, then he has to explain to them how and why that was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be a really interesting, like, we kind of got teased with that relationship with Kara and Mon-El starting something up. And I think when she figures out he was a prince and lied to her, and with everything that this prince we can allegedly he's done, there's going to be some tension there, and it's going to be interesting to see in the season how that relationship evolves one way or another. Does it go towards actually a love relationship, or does that tear them apart? And I'm really excited for that.
Also, guys, everyone is going to sing in like 2 months.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That is just the best news that there is.
And Darren Criss being music meister, you know, Neil Patrick Harris was my first choice, as many of you know, but... And Darren Criss wasn't even on the list, but he nailed Hedwig, just like Neil, so I think he could do Music Meister pretty well.
Yeah. And that'll be a fun Glee reunion as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, as we mentioned earlier, I did the Glee panel, and it's always fun to have these characters back together, and singing is obviously a huge bonus.
And there will be a crossover with some of our legends in Legion of Doom, because, again, I'm going to mention him. Sorry, guys. Malcolm Merlyn will be in, because John Barman is a wonderful singer, as well as Victor Garber, half of Firestorm.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah, for those who don't know, for a little more context, yeah. if you haven't been like...
You're like, what is everybody talking about with singing and musicals?
Yeah. There's going to be a musical crossover episode, and it's starring, or the main villain is going to be the Music Meister, which should be the catalyst for all the singing and dancing and musical stuff. They're basically taking a page out of Buffy's book and being like, musical episode.
Well, yes. I think when you have this level of talent and that you know can sing and are performers of that level, it's like, you kind of have to at some point. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, if you look at Melissa Benoist and Grant Gustin, obviously were on Glee, as was Darren Criss, but then you've also got Victor Garber, Jesse L. Martin, and Jeremy Jordan all have Broadway backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you've got all these amazing singers in one place. It'd be foolish not to use them. So thank you, CW and DC Comics, for making my life complete.
And yeah. I totally forgot to mention Jesse L. Martin would be on here and would be singing. This is why... I know they were asking if Cat Grant would be back. This will be the perfect time, because Ally McBeal reunion, Jesse L. Martin, Callista Flockhart, make my dreams come true.
I will be fun at some point. I feel like at some point this season she has to drop back in, and it would be fun to have her for a minute.
The way they discussed it publicly, officially, when the show was moved, is that Callista Flockhart was not going to continue to be as active a presence because she's still in Los Angeles, show moved to Vancouver, but that the intention was, I believe, to have her around as much as they could. However, it ends up making sense. So my assumption would be we'll see her again somewhere.
Yeah, we'd have to. Even if it's in, like, she does, like, a special flashback, like, not, like, a regular person, but, like...
I just want them to all be out somewhere, like, at their equivalent location to Jitters, and she just, Callista Flockhart just walks by in the background and looks right at the camera and waves, and then keeps going.
Well, I feel like they kind of, on Supergirl, answered Jitters with this, like, new bar.
They're Jitters now, I suppose. So Callista Flockhart, Cat Grant's somehow just in the background, and she looks almost like she looks dead into the camera, like she's been caught somewhere she shouldn't be, and she goes and then just books it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my prediction.
That's what she was doing. She was hooking up with a Martian.
I hear you could be anybody you want, Martians. All right, I'm gonna wrap this baby up. So thank you for joining us here on AfterBuzz TV. We really appreciate you tuning in, and we hope you come back every week. Until next week, you can catch us on the social medias. Stephanie Winger, where can they find you?
At Stephanie Winger.
And I am Lex Michael. It was my turn and I wasn't ready. I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael.
And since I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys, you can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
Nice. And you guys did interviews recently with, you guys did interviews
for things.
Well, we went to the Justice League Dark, the new DC cartoon movie, premiere tonight, and those interviews with Matt Ryan, Jason O'Mara,
Enrico Colantoni,
and Ray Chase will be up tomorrow on the AfterBuzz TV YouTube page. So my dream came true. And Legends has a new time.
Yes, everybody, don't forget Legends of Tomorrow has a new time. It's on Tuesday nights after Flash, so the after show has moved as well. We are taping at 11.
We'll be the late ones, guys. Yeah.
So stay up late and make sure you catch all of us on stuff. Once again, thank you for joining us here on AfterBuzz TV. We will see you next week. Until then, have a super week. Mwah.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Dramanos! The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.